We are doing Pirkei Avot. Now, ordinarily, this time of year, after Pesach, on Sunday nights, we do Pirkei Avot instead of our Navi class. And that way we have our Jewish home class for half of the class, and we have Pirkei Avot for the other half of the class. This year, that we're so behind in Navi, we have to continue Navi, even though it's after Pesach. And that leaves us in a situation where we only have half an hour, 45 minutes. We have to decide which we're going to do, the Jewish home or Pirkei Avot. So I was contemplating, and I called up Rav Listman, and we decided together that what we'll do is we'll learn Pirkei Avot with a slant towards the Jewish home. So this way we'll try to get the best of both worlds. We'll learn Pirkei Avot, and we'll also discuss the Jewish home and try to explore the practical applications of these tremendous messages within the home. So I hope we get the best of both worlds, and we don't end up being what they call in Chazal, kerech mikan v'kerech mikan, bald on both sides, that you get neither. Yeah.
Can I maybe present something that might be a little radical?
I'm listening.
Okay. I'm just speaking for myself here. Well, the prophets, most people that started the prophets, I don't think are here anymore. I think this is a very new crowd. Would it be possible to do Pirkei Avot and the Jewish home? Because there's prophets during the week when I listen.
Yeah, but here we cover between 5 and 10 chapters a night. With Rav Listman, you cover a few psukim a week. I mean, that's the goal of this class. If you don't get it here, I don't know where you'll get it. So I feel it's important for you guys. You know, I did it last year and the year before. Yes?
Rav Listman, anything else when you ask the Jewish home class? Because I sort of...
So I think you'll get more. Let's try it 1 week and then give me feedback.
Yeah.
And in preparing this class, I didn't feel you'd be getting less of the Jewish home in this class.
Okay.
I see that. That's what I told Rav Listman, that there's going to be heavy resistance. Let's see. So let's begin. Pirkei Avot is the one tractate in Shas that focuses on being a good human being. And in truth, whenever we began our classes on Jewish home, I always quote the story about how a friend of mine once said, what are you preparing class on the Jewish home? All you got to do is tell them, be good human beings and they'll have a good Jewish home. So the truth is that they do go hand in hand, Pirkei Avot, with the Jewish home. Pirkei Avot begins by recording our tradition. And the commentaries explain that many, many religions and many communities have their own social norms, which they say this is a proper way of living life. You go to upper middle class, what's it called?
White suburbia.
So you mow your lawn, and you you keep your trees trimmed, and your front yard raked. You're a good neighbor, right? You don't blare your TV or whatever. You're a good neighbor. So different societies have their own definition of what being a good neighbor is all about. And one might think that Pirkei Avot is just like that. It's social norms. It's what we Jews, what our social norms are. And that's why the Mishnayot begin by recounting our tradition, to point out that when we speak about what being good is all about, we're not discussing social norms. We're discussing things that were given at Sinai together with the rest of the Torah, things that are eternal, that do not change over time. The applications we have to learn over time. Today we're not talking about oxen, we're talking about cars maybe. The applications might change, but the concept of what is good and what is bad hasn't changed. And that's why these Mishnayot begin with a recounting of our tradition. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We were given a formula for what it is to be a good person. And it's interesting that you could learn the rest of the tractates and somehow you'll miss it. A person could come to yeshiva and spend his life learning about when do I owe you money, when don't I owe you money, how do I get out of paying you, how do I make sure you don't get out of paying me. We could learn the nuances of the law and walk away being very tough people. And so our sages saw fit to have a separate tractate that talks to us about how to be good people. And we have to bear that in mind. Being a good person is not about just what are my rights. It's also about what type of human being does God want me to be? And that's a question which if a person has before him, he can answer many of life's questions. Sometimes we think questions are complicated. And the truth is that if we stop and ask ourselves, what does God really want me to do now? Most of the time we know the answer. We like to kid ourselves and give rationalizations of why there's more than one possible answer here. But the truth is that deep down inside, almost always we know what the right answer is. Sometimes it takes someone else or all kinds of tricks to bring out the right answer. And these Mishnayot give us formulas that simplify the job sometimes. The importance of continuing with tradition cannot be overstated with regard to the home. People sometimes ask me, what can we get you? I always say, if you get me a beautiful home, if I can see you in your homes, having a normal, beautiful home, you've given me the greatest gift. We're not looking to invent something spectacular. We're looking to continue with tradition. And believe me, that's spectacular enough. If each of you walk out of this class and view it as a goal, believe me, it's not an easy goal. A goal to continue the tradition and to just build a nice home. I don't need you to be the giants of the next generation. You have the potentials for it. And if you can, go for it. But my goal, and I think that the greatest success, is when you could take the tradition and continue. Just continue it within your home. And so we'll begin the first Mishnah, which begins with a recounting of the tradition. Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe received the Torah from God who revealed himself at Sinai. And notice that even Moshe is described as a mekabel, one who was willing to accept. Umsara li Yoshua, then he gave over what he received to Yoshua, the Yoshua l'zkenim, he gave it over to the elders, uzkenim l'nevi'im, they gave it over to the prophets. Unvi'im esaru al anshei kneset hagdola, and then it went on from generation to generation till the period of the Second Temple, and in the beginning of the Second Temple, our leaders were the men of the Great Assembly. Hem amru shlosha dvarim, and the men of the Great Assembly, they left over a message of three things. They said, Hevu metunim badin. Be patient when you're deciding. One of the biggest errors that people make within marriage and as parents is that they're swift to decide. Kid comes home from school, he's crying. He's weeping. He's hysterical. And you look at the kid and say, what happened? And he says, the teacher locked me in the room for a half hour. And you're on the phone and you're calling the principal, what's wrong with this teacher? Where do you get these teachers from, locking a kid in the room for a half hour? Wait. Why don't you ask the kid a little bit more about what happened? Maybe the kid was picking up sticks and trying to poke other kids' eyes out. Maybe the kid was picking up chairs and throwing them at the teacher and breaking windows. Maybe the kid already proved himself the only way to calm him down was to put him in a room, and maybe the teacher told him, I'm putting you in this room till you're calm. And the kid started jumping around the room and seeing what he could throw the chairs at, and the teacher said, I'm not letting you out of this room till you calm down. And it took the kid a full half hour till he was willing to say, I'm sorry, and actually sit down. Maybe that's what happened. Kid walks in and he's bawling, he's crying. What happened? My sister picked up the solid metal Mack truck and whacked me in the head. You walk in there and you're ready, fire and brimstone. Maybe he hit her in the head three times first. before you react, Hevu metunim badin. Our sages said, the first message the men of the Great Assembly gave us was be patient before you decide. Take it easy. You'll never regret having asked another question, such as, tell me what else happened. The first thing you should ask is, what else happened? Try to understand where the other side of the story is coming from. And kids have a very hard time lying. Should know, kids can lie, but they're gonna have a hard time making up a whole story. When you ask the kid, well, why were you in that room locked for a half an hour? The kid will tone it down, I'll tell you, well, I was acting up a little bit, or you'll suddenly see a new slant on the story, and the kid will not, normal kids will not completely ignore that there's another side to the story. Till the age that you should be involved in the story. I don't think even a 15-year-old would, I don't think so. He'll gawk. He'll find a way out. He'll say that's not important. You don't lock a kid in the room for a half hour. But I don't think he'll lie to your face and tell you, I didn't do anything. The teacher just walked in and told me he locked me in the room. You know, after one time, if you see you're dealing with such a kid, then you know you got a problem. But usually the kid is not going to lie straight out to you. And this is also true if there's one key that can help marriages, it's patience. I had last week, I had a class with a group of young grooms, young chatanim. And the question that was bugging all of them was, when can you give rebuke? So one of the tips in marriage is, you want to give rebuke? You want to say something's wrong? So there's a whole long list. The first rule is don't. But if after everything is said and done, you say there's something that you must say, so one of the tips is, wait for a time that you're as close as can be, when the relationship is budding and everything's perfect, and then there's a whole formula for how to present it. So they all said, what do you mean? When things are budding, that's not when you're going to want to say something. You want to say something when she ticked you off, and then you're yelling about five other things, and then you say, and not only that, but... No, that's the test. If you really have to say it, if it's something that really must be dealt with, then when things are budding, you'll find a nice way to bring it up, and you'll be able to work on it together. More often than not, our reaction, our knee-jerk reaction, stems from our feelings and not from our logic. We react with feeling, we justify with logic. And we have to pause that. We have to be able to react with logic. And the only way we can do that is hevu mitunim padin, wait. And waiting doesn't mean, like some people think, I'm going to count till 10 and then. No, waiting could mean wait a week, wait a month, wait till you're not emotionally charged. Wait till you can react logically. I often tell the story about how one of my kids once did something and I didn't react. And someone present asked me, why aren't you reacting? Doesn't the kid deserve a reaction? And I said, you're right. But I'm after very little sleep. I guess it was after a Thursday night with you guys or something. And I'm very upset. And I don't know that I'm going to give him the reaction that he deserves. He deserves a reaction, but I'm not sure I'm going to keep it in check. So if I can't do the right chinuch, so I'm not going to do anything. So they said, so he's going to get away with it? So I said, in chinuch, things repeat themselves. And it's true, what he needs is the reaction now. But nothing's going to happen if we wait, and there'll be a different time. And if it's necessary, I'll react then. And if it's not necessary, we didn't lose anything. But what's for sure is, I don't have the strength to react correctly now. So I don't have a right to react. Hevu mitunim badin. A person has to pause before he calls the shots. And it's rare that you'll regret having paused. I can only remember in my lifetime that I regret times that I didn't pause. And regret, I can tell you, means that for over 20 years, these are things that come up in my Yom Kippur. Regret is a weighty thing when you actually analyze what you've done in life. I'm serious, and in chinuch especially. Chinuch is where we have great responsibility, great potential for both directions. It's already 20 years, and I still regret certain things that I did when I was younger in chinuch. I wish I would have waited. And when you wait, you can also take counsel. Yeah?
So the idea that you're not supposed to tell a child you're going to be punished... Correct. So, if you use like the "I'm going to beat you" stare without actually saying anything, isn't that the same thing?
100%. I didn't mean to use that stare.
I don't know.
Yeah, you're right.
I didn't actually think that about the Rav.
No. You're 100% right. You're not allowed to give the child an indication he will be punished. That's clear in the Tosefta.
So the idea of either immediate smack or no smack at all, is that an okay concept? I know a family who that's the law in the house is either an instantaneous physical reaction or no physical reaction. Is that a decent concept?
That's partially true, but one of the tools you have to use in chinuch is to make believe you didn't see. You don't have to see everything. If the kid thinks you didn't see it, that's fine. Very often there are things I see and I ignore. You have to ignore. You have to choose what to react to and what not to. And sometimes you ignore, and then later you say, hey, wait a second, you remember this and this that happened? Let's talk about it. And I'm not a big fan of a physical punishment. I think that if you weigh your words, then harsh words can have a lot of weight. And if you weigh your tone, then a harsh tone can have a lot of weight. If the way you speak to your children more often is with patience, then it's enough to say a harsh word. That can carry a lot more weight. But if a parent is off the handle all the time and they're yelling all the time, then what happens is yelling doesn't mean much to the kids. And then they have to shriek. And then shrieking doesn't mean much to the kids. And then the parents find themselves at a point of, okay, what am I going to do next? And the parents who make the wrong choice of using physical force are going to find themselves very quickly with the kid doing something worse. Kids will always find something worse to do. Whatever you think is the worst possible thing, believe me, they're going to do something worse next time. You always got to have more things in the arsenal than you're using. You got to really, really save and really gauge a time that it's fit to use a harsh reprimand. You know, just because the kid was unusually chutzpahdik, so you have to think what the right reaction is. Or, you know, if you're going to react, if you're going to blow up over the kid's pouring noodles down his sister's back, what are you going to do when he runs into the street blind? You know, is it the same weight as pouring noodles down her back? Or when he's experimenting with forks in the socket? You know, you got to leave blowing up for things that are really dangerous. And by the way, these are real examples. These happen. It's not a game. You know, kids will experiment with things. And pouring noodles down her back needs a reaction, right? But it's not the end of the world, believe me. The kid's going to live just because she got noodles down her back. A fork in the socket is a little bit more dangerous. Yes. By the way, and there's worse than the fork in the socket. So you got to leave things in the arsenal. Yeah.
Can you give a little translation of Hevu Mitunim Badin?
Hevu, you should be. Mitunim, patient, Badin, without, before deciding, before giving a ruling. The Gemara recounts a story that there was an Amora who was walking in the street and he saw a woman wearing a bright red scarf that caused everyone to turn their heads and look at her. So he walked over and pulled it off her. And she took him to court. And the courts found out she was not even Jewish. So they made him pay for the shame that in public he pulled off a red scarf. They paid her and made him pay 400 silver gold coins. So he asked her, what's your name? So she said, my name is Matun. So he said, Matun, Matun. Matun could mean 200. Matun could mean patience. So he said, you know, Matun, Matun, if I'd only been Metunim Badin, if I'd only be patient to verify what's going on here, I would have saved myself these 400 coins. And in life, it's often that way. There was once a chassan who came to me and said, you know, I don't know what's wrong with my wife. I could be sitting there at the dinner table and she's sitting right next to me and she's sitting like a footstep away from the counter and I'm sitting at the other end of the table and she'll say, could you pass me that? And I get up and I go and I pass her that. And I'm asking myself, like, why'd she ask me to get her that? You know, she was closer than I was. And he says, you know, it's happening time and again. So I said to him, Matun, Matun, wait, she's normal. You'll find out with time. You guys are newly married. Wait and see what's going on. After a few days, they were in the emergency room. She was having splitting headaches. Every movement was hurting her. She didn't want to bother her chassan, but it was coming out in different ways. And then finally, one day, she was lying in bed weeping. He asked, what's wrong? She says, my head's killing me. I've been having splitting headaches for days now. And finally, suddenly it made sense. Patience. You'll never regret that you waited. Almost never. Yeah. Again?
Rav said the key to a good marriage is...
There are many keys to a good marriage. No, one of them is patience.
7 minutes ago.
I don't remember. V'hamidu talmidim arbe. The next thing the men of the great assembly taught is establish many students. Chazal say this is a reference to the attitude we're supposed to have in life. A person can sometimes feel, you know, I've done enough when I was younger. A person was married when he was younger, he brought children to the world. A person was a teacher when he was younger, he brought students to the world. and a person gets older and suddenly he feels like I've done my time. Chazal say no. Hamidu talmidim arbe, bring many students to the world. If you brought students to the world when you were younger, like Rabbi Akiva, who brought 24,000 students, they all passed away during this time. It's only his last 5 students that stuck around and kept the whole oral Torah going. The last students that he taught when he was an old man, because he kept this Mishnah, what the men of the great assembly taught us, established many students. The Hamidu, stand on their feet. Talmidim arbe, many students. And Chazal say the same thing applies to marriage. That a person shouldn't say, you know, I was married when I was young, I brought kids to the world enough. Chazal say, no. If a person, God forbid, lost his first wife and now he's an older man, if only he can, he should marry a woman who could have children. Bring more children to the world. You never know which one is going to succeed. Chazal say, you should never give up on investing, on planting seeds in the future. Vasu, yes. I wasn't talking about physically capable. I meant other things. I meant that he won't, that he'll have enough patience, that he won't destroy the kids he brings to the world. You know, there are other criteria you need in order to bring kids to the world, that he doesn't have kids who are so jealous that they'll make his and their lives miserable. That there are other things a person has to take into account. Vasu siyag la Torah. Our sages said, add a fence to the Torah. That's our responsibility. A person shouldn't say, you know, the Torah says you got to stop working at the second Shabbos comes in, so I'm going to work till the last minute. I'm going to shave till the last minute. No, make yourself a fence. Distance yourself from it. I always tell Chassanim, the laws of Yichud are minimum. The Torah says, don't leave yourself alone with a woman that something improper could happen with, right? You're allowed to be alone with your mother. You're allowed to be with your sister if you don't have a permanent rooms together. You know, if you're not dorming together, if it's just for a night or a week, that's okay, even with your sister. People sometimes tell me, you know, I'm dating this girl, but we stayed up late in her parents' house talking. Did you really think anyone was going to walk in when you were there late? You could say technically someone could have walked in, so nothing improper is going to happen. Realistically, we have to make fences beyond the letter of the law. And Chazal say that when it comes to these fences, on the one hand, every person has to try and make them. That's our responsibility. On the other hand, you can't go off the handle. People do go off the handle, and it destroys their marriages. The first person to go off the handle was Adam and Eve. The Tana, the Avos Rabbi Nosson says on this Mishnah, what's a prime example of someone who went too far? Adam with Eve. God said, don't eat from the fruit. He said, don't touch it. The serpent came, pushed her against the tree. She touched it. Nothing happened. He said, there you see. He told you, don't eat and don't touch. Well, you see, you touched it and nothing happened. You can eat it and nothing will happen. And so she did. Our sages say, Adam went too far. He thought he'll just round the edges. He'll tell her you can't even touch it, and he won't bother mentioning. God said don't eat, but we'll take it upon ourselves to go another step. We won't touch. He didn't do that. He made believe, just don't touch. Husbands are tempted to do that sometimes, because if they go into the details with their wives, and the wife might say, well, maybe it's enough if we do touch it, you know. So the husband prefers to tell her a story. This is a common thing in marriages. Mm-hmm. Look in Aesop's Fables. How many stories do you have that way? And husbands have to be prepared that their wives will not listen to them. Look in Aesop's Fables. See how often that happens. Did Eve listen to Adam? Didn't listen to Adam. Throughout history, look in any folklore. Every type of folklore is going to tell you about how a husband warned his wife not to do something, and she did. Aladdin and his lamp. You know, come on, almost every folklore has their stories that go along those lines, because this is universal, starting with Adam and Eve. So Chazal said, Asu siyag la Torah, make a fence for the Torah. But be careful, explain the fence to your spouse. Do it in a way that makes sense to them. And don't go too far. Our sages say that Adam went too far. Our sages say that Yaakov went too far. Yaakov was coming to meet his brother Esav. Esav was a fine character. Esav was an adulterer. Esav was a murderer. Yaakov is worried. So he takes his daughter Dinah and puts her in a box. Esav shouldn't see her. Fine, that makes sense. But that's not enough. Yaakov takes nails and closes the box, nails up the box. Our sages say that went too far. You had to hide her, so put her in a box. What do you have to nail it shut for? He went too far. He went too far, or sages say that was indicative of a general thing, which his going too far caused ultimately, what's the next story in the Torah? She's abducted by Shechem. How come that happened? Our sages say that's what happens. You go too far one way, it backfires. Shimon HaTzadik Hayam Misharei Knesset HaGdola. Shimon the righteous, he was from the remnants of the men of the great assembly. He used to say, Al Shlosha Devarim Ha'olam Omed. The world stands on three things. The world was created for the sake of three things. This was the purpose. You want to know why the world was created? What's the purpose? Here you have it. And this is something that people have to ask themselves. What is the purpose of life? What is the purpose of the world? And it's one of the things you have to explore when you're dating. And it's one of the things that you have to decide with your spouse-to-be and then with your spouse, what role you're going to play in all this. What are the three things the world stands on? Ala Torah, Torah study. What weight are you going to give Torah study in your home? You got to talk to the girls you date about that. And you have to think about that with your wives. At different times, you can invest differently, but this has to be one of the focuses. V'ala avodah, and on prayer. Husbands sometimes say, you know, my wife is putter from prayer. She is enough. She just said birchas Torah. She did her prayer. Yeah, but what kind of life does she have? One of the purposes of the world is prayer. A person that doesn't have that is lacking a basic connection between him and God. Torah is God's word to us. Prayer is our word to Hashem. Right? It's a dual relationship. So the world was created with three purposes. Torah, Avodah, and Gmilut Chasadim. And all three have to be discussed when you're dating. Some people, what's right for them in Gmilut Chasadim is that once a month they have guests for a meal. Fine. Other people want to have guests, three meals every Shabbos. Most homes can't function that way. Most homes need to have time for themselves. Gmilut Chasadim is important. You have to know what type of home. Different stages in life allow you to do different things. When our kids were very small, so we had a situation where anyone who wanted could come because they weren't influenced by the guests who were coming. Mm-hmm. So we had guests who came in and drove in on Yom Tov and Shabbos. You know, we had everything because it was even posted in different places that we have a Seder and people came. We didn't even know. You know, people who were otherwise going to go to Jews for Jesus were sent to us. So we'd get a phone call. We're sending you someone for Pesach. Okay. It didn't matter too much. Where the person was coming from, because they wouldn't influence the kids. The kids grow older, you have to take other things into account. Suddenly, a year ago, a guest comes on Shabbos with an umbrella, and the kids ask, Dad, could you use an umbrella on Shabbos? Mm. A guest walk in with an earring, and the kids say, do men wear earrings? And suddenly the kids are starting to ask, wait a second, what should be our norms? So then you think again, what Gmilus Chasadim should I be doing? Because my kids are going to see it. You want them to, on the one hand, be aware of what's out there on a certain level. On the other hand, you don't want that to be their norm. You know, you don't want to destroy their norms. You want them to be open to people who are not like them, but you also want them to have a certain norm. So that's a balance. Torah, Avodah, and Gmilus Chasadim, that's our focus. And different people in different stages in life put different weights on different ones. But all three have to be a part of every day of our life. And all three have to be a focus of our home. And together with our spouses, we have to think what weight to put on which. The recommendation, for example, is that a couple, when they're newly married, will be together at nights. So the husband, theoretically, can bring a chavrusa home and learn with a chavrusa at home for an hour or two at nights. But he shouldn't go out to Beis Medrash. It's the first year of marriage. She'll do her homework. She'll do her whatever she has to do for work. And he'll learn with a chavrusa at night. After they're married a year or two, after Bezrat Hashem there are children, so then it makes more sense that the husband should go to a shir at night or go to a Beis Medrash at night. The way we balance and we work out the Torah, Avodah, and Gmilut Chasadim are going to be different. We just have to realize that those have to be the focus of our lives. Those are the focus of the world. The Mishnah says this is what the world was created for. And these are things you guys have to think through and then discuss on your dates. You don't have to have it all worked out because you can't know in advance how to work it out. But you do have to think a little bit of the importance of these and how to try, at least where you aspire to incorporate them in your lives. Tov, we'll pick up here next week.